Okay, good morning. Welcome to the House Committee on Human Services, Finance, and Policy. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the House Human Services Finance Committee to order. And the first agenda item is to introduce ourselves, and we'll take a roll call from the introductions. I'm going to start with our CLA. I'll do some staff first, and then I'll go to members. So our first person that will introduce themselves is our CLA, Lindsay Hansen. Ms. Hansen?
Sure. I'm Lindsay Hansen. I see lots of familiar faces and some new ones, too. I've been around the House for a while now, starting my third year working with Chair Schultz. I have a master's in public health, and I come from MDH. So I'm excited to work with all of you. If you need anything, just let me know.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. And we'll move to our committee administrator, Ms. Vang.
Hello, everyone. I'm Yingya, and I will be your committee administrator for this session. Feel free to reach out to me if you need anything. My educational background is in nutrition, and I have maneuvered through human services throughout my lifetime. And previous to this, I was a CLA for the Subcommittee on Elections, and also I have worked in the St. Paul City Council office and worked on the minimum wage there.
Thank you. And the next is Joe Durheim.
My name is Joe Durheim. I am the DFL researcher for this committee, as well as the DFL researcher for the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee with Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Joe. And do we have, Jeremiah Wingstad?
Hi, Jeremiah Wingstead. I'm the Republican researcher for this committee and Representative Liebling's Health Committee as well.
Thank you, Jeremiah. And now I'm going to go, I don't know, is Vice Chair Kristen Bonner, Representative Bonner, are you on yet? I don't see her.
She just got on.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll give her a sec. Hi, Representative Bonner. We're just making introductions, so if you want to introduce yourself, you're the vice chair, so go ahead. You want to mention something about your district, what you would like to, if we visited your district, what should we see or do? And then very quickly, briefly, and then talk about your passion in human services or healthcare.
Yes. Thank you very much. Sorry for the technical glitch there. I am State Representative Kristen Bonner, and I'm very proud to be serving with Chair Schultz on the Human Services Committee. My district is Maple Grove and Osseo, 34B. In my city, well, I cover two cities, actually, one which is a thriving metropolis and the other a hidden gem of Maple Grove and Osseo. In Maple Grove, the town green is usually all the rage with concerts in the park and activities for the kids. And in Osseo, they have a beautiful main street with tons of shops and just lovely little places for families to visit. I am excited about human services because I know that this is an area that deeply touches the lives of so many Minnesotans. And so there's a lot of good work to be done, and I look forward to that opportunity.
Thank you, Vice Chair Bonner. Now we'll go to the Republican lead, Representative Albright.
Good morning, everyone. Representative Tony Albright, I serve the folks in the middle third of Scott County, including Prior Lake and Jordan, in addition to several townships. Notable in the, we have the three lakes contiguous inside of Prior Lake. So if you're ever down this way and you want to enjoy some water sports, we've got that in an enormous way. If you have a sweet tooth, I also serve the owner and the folks down at the Minnesota's largest candy store. So if you ever want to take a trip down there, maybe for a dental escapade, we can go in and just look at the number of cavities that we provide for through our confections down there. I think this committee certainly serves a broad and diverse constituency. the ones that I think are imperative to really focus on, and Chair Schultz and I have talked about this, are the ones that are in the shadows of their life, whether that be through mental disability, through no fault of their own. The state is, I think, obligated to make sure that they are, their lives are preserved, defended, and given an opportunity to succeed. So thank you for the opportunity to share the next 2 years with all of you.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Now we're going to go in alphabetical order with members. So the first one is Representative Bolden.
Good morning. So I am Representative Liz Bolden, just starting my first term in the Minnesota House, representing District 25B, which is Northern Rochester. This seat was formerly held by Dwayne Selk, who has retired. My background, professional background, is in nursing. I've been a nurse for nearly 19 years. Most of my bedside time was in the neuro ICU, and then I transitioned to education, where I now lead a couple of teams of nurse educators, mostly in critical care areas. And so I am passionate about ensuring, you know, healthcare quality, access to healthcare to Minnesotans, and making sure that we are also working on racial disparities within healthcare. And certainly the work of this committee, as has been said, touches the lives of families across Minnesota. So really important work to be done. And I'm excited to be here and to do that work. And if you were to visit my district, I would say one thing to take note of, or that you would want to stop and see, is the parks. There are really great parks across Rochester and within my district. Great for families and fun. And even when it's cold outside, still great to be outside. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bolden, and welcome to the committee. Next one is Representative Burkle.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Representative John Brickle from District 1A, formerly Representative Fabian's district. If you were to come and visit my district, I think possibly the most, as you all know, Representative Fabian, he was a big fisherman. The Lake of the Woods, if you went up to Laurel and hit Lake of the Woods, that's probably what you'd want to see first. As far as passionate about in my district, as Liz said, as Representative Bolden said, access to healthcare, especially in the rural setting and long-term care facilities up there. We have quite a few nursing homes as an aging population, rural area. That would be my passion right now. Thanks for having me here.
Well, welcome to the committee, Representative. Looking forward to working with you. Let's see, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. I represent District 43A, which is the cities of Birchwood, Willardy, Montemedi, and parts of White Bear Lake and Maplewood. If you were to come to my district, the thing that you'd want to see and partake in would be the actual lake of White Bear Lake. It's the largest lake in the East Metro area. Some of the areas that I have a special interest in is the youth who are experiencing homelessness. I've worked in that world for the last 14 years. And then also that spins off of that, things around behavioral health and mental health issues and addiction. Thank you.
Thank you. And we should note that Chair Fisher is chairing the Behavioral Health Division of this committee. So we're grateful for his work in that space. Representative Frederick.
Hi, my name is Representative Luke Frederick. I am succeeding Representative Considine in District 19B, which is Mankato and Eagle Lake and the community of Skyline. And I'm excited to be here. I think one of the things that I'm passionate about is that intersection point between the mental health side and the corrections world too. And not only making sure that the people that are receiving services have access to those services, but also the workers in those settings, that they have a safe environment to be able to work in and basically end their shift in and be able to go home safely. If you were to come to Mankato, typically, if you start talking about food, my ears are going to perk up a little bit. So there's a lot of really good options. I'm hesitant to name any one, but we do have lots of really great ones, including some that have just opened and been successful in the last year. So if anyone wants to come down, I'd be happy to show them around.
Thanks, Representative Frederick. Next is Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. My name is Jess Hansen. I will be representing the City of Savage and the northwest part of Burnsville here in 56A. I will be succeeding Hunter Cantrell and taking over for him. I'm really excited to be here. My background is in social work, and so this field is very near and dear to my heart. What I'm passionate about is making sure that anytime we are working with families and individuals, that all of these programs honor their dignity and worth, that they're culturally appropriate, that they're accessible, that it's transparent, and that it can help people at the times in their lives when they need it the most. I was also a recipient of services from the state of Minnesota that really helped me when I was young as a teen mom get to where I am today. So I have firsthand experience in addition to experience in the field, just dealing with some of the barriers. And so I'm very excited to get to talk about more of those. If you come to my district, I have a chocolate factory here, so you should check that out. We also have a really, really great small business community. And our small business community has bonded together to really help each other through this pandemic. And so I always invite folks to come here and visit our small businesses. Thank you, everybody.
Wow, chocolate factory, it sounds exciting. Okay, Representative Keel.
Good morning. Yes, I am in District 1B. District 1B encompasses almost completely three counties, one of which, Polk, is the largest agricultural county in the state. And therefore, I'm a farmer and don't have to be to live in Polk County, but we're a lot of us are attached to agriculture. If you were to visit my district, you would see super flat lands in the west and hills in the east, more lakes in the east than in the west. What am I passionate about? I guess I would say aging has been important to me, but personal care activities. My background is farming, but my family background is I am the caretaker. So depending on whether you cut yourself and don't know how to deal with it or have to go to the hospital, someone in the family is usually calling me to ask, what do we do next? I'm sure sometimes my local hospitals are like, oh no, she gave somebody advice again. You know, those doctors are like, ah. Anyway, I'm very excited to be here. Appreciate serving and helping human services, finance and policy. I'm having a hard time with that new name. So anyway, we'll get there. Glad to be here.
Thank you, Representative Keel. Next is Chair Liebling.
Hello, everybody. I'm Tina Liebling. I represent part of Rochester, kind of the central part, House District 26A. You can see some of it behind me here in the picture. But the Mayo Clinic main campus is in my district. And I am chairing the corollary committee to Representative Schultz's committee. So we'll be working together, all of us, on the Health and Human Services budget. You know, one of the things about human services is we don't really think about it, but it really the human services piece of health and human services is an enormous part of the budget. And I've always felt that Minnesotans are very proud of the level of service that we do give people with disabilities in the state and elderly people and so on. And even though, as you will all learn if you don't already know, we do spend a lot of money doing that. So I look forward to working with all of you to make sure that we continue to have services that we can be proud of and that we improve services so we can be more proud of them, because let's face it, we still have a lot of challenges in this area. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. Next is Representative Moeller.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Kelly Moeller, and I represent the northern Ramsey County suburbs, Shoreview, Moundsview, Arden Hills, and a little bit of Spring Lake Park. And when I think about what my district has to offer, water is really one of the first things that comes to mind. We have a number of great lakes up here. A lot of good kayaking, and especially the portions of my district that are in the Rice Creek Water Trail. So if you want to join me in the summer for a kayak, I would welcome you. And then in the winter, our Shoreview Community Center has an indoor water park. And I'm really interested in this committee, both for issues related to mental health and then also disability issues. I really discovered that I had a passion for those issues after working with a number of constituents with disabilities, their family members, and other advocates last session. And I'm really excited to dig in and get to work on those issues.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Next is Representative Neuer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everyone. My name is Mahmoud Noor. I represent District 60B in Minneapolis. That's the neighborhoods surrounding the University of Minnesota. Believe me or not, I do have an island in my district. So it's one of the islands that we have in the state, in the central Minneapolis. And I'm excited to know most of you have gone through the University of Minnesota because it's a significant institution in our state. And I have been human services has been my sector that I've worked in for almost 15 years. I have issued benefits, I've done quality control, I've been a systems management for the Department of Human Services from childcare to Maxis system. I'm sure you'll be hearing more about MMIS and so many other things. So I'm excited to join all of you. The thing that I'm excited about human services is protecting the health and welfare of the most vulnerable Minnesotans. So thank you. Look forward to working with all of you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that. And we are going to really rely on those skills that you have to bring to committee. The next person is Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. I represent the city of Elk River, Big Lake Township, and a small part of Otsego. My things that I'm excited about working with on this community, this committee is representing adult disability programs and long-term care facilities. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Novotny. Next person is Representative Pearson.
Representative Pearson, I'm in Olmsted County, so we actually have three representatives of the four out of Olmsted County serving on this committee. So recognizing both the obviously world-class healthcare system that we have in Rochester with Mayo Clinic, as well as the disparity in the needs that we have in our community, the diversity in our community is remarkable. To have that full spectrum of folks from socioeconomic and racial backgrounds. It's a great fabric, actually, a great representation of the state of Minnesota, in my opinion, in our lovely Olmsted County. So I grew up on a dairy farm in a town called Butterfield, Minnesota. And of course, I'd put a plug out to a lot of the great restaurants that are in Rochester. We've got the Rochester International Airport. Our Olmsted County Fair is tough to beat, but a lot of things you can do in my district, and come on down and visit sometime when things are better. So looking forward to working on all the issues that this committee faces. And again, I think everything's so interwoven, and that's where we need to find our solutions, creating opportunities to deliver services to our constituencies more efficiently, and creating, especially in our new world, our ability to meet like this is a great example of that we should be able to do a lot of things in our state that we never thought we could do before in a different way that delivers the services more efficiently and more appropriately. And we can keep an open mind to those results and positive outcomes that can be learned from this.
Okay, thank you, Representative Pearson. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, members and members of the public. So I represent the southwestern part of St. Paul, Highland Park, Mac Groveland area. It's a neighborhood that has a lot of connections with higher education. St. Kate's is fully in my district and part of St. Thomas, St. Paul campus, and then we hug right around McAllister. campus, and so glad to have them there. I'm the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee, and so working to help get the youngest Minnesotans off to a great start. There's, of course, significant connections with the work of this committee and Chair Liebling's committee and others in that work as well. I work as a prosecutor outside the legislature. I specialize in domestic assault and sexual exploitation, sex trafficking cases, but handle a broad range of cases. So I've got a particular interest in the connections between that work and the work of this committee and the welfare of young kids, child protection, child welfare, and just generally wanting to help protect vulnerable people. That's why I went into that work. And of course, that's connected with the work of this committee as well. And so glad to be with you all. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Jordan Rasmussen, and I represent House District 8A. My predecessor is Representative Bud Nornes, and the recommended spots to visit in 8A would have to be our two beautiful state parks, and we also have about 1,000 lakes up there in Otter Tail County. So I have about 11 towns and cities and 33 townships in Otter Tail County as part of District 8A. My professional background is as a management consultant and investor. I've spent a lot of time in the healthcare space and the software space. So one of the topics I'm interested in working on more is looking at how we can use technology software to better and perhaps more efficiently care for the most vulnerable that we have in society.
Thank you, Representative. Next is Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here on your committee. This is my second term in the legislature. I represent District 53B, which is almost all of Woodbury. Probably the most remarkable part of this southeastern metro suburb is our schools. I represent families with children in the North St. Paul Maplewood School District, the South Washington County School District, and the Stillwater School District. Those are terrific places, and each have their own personality and opportunities for kids and teachers. I worked at the Humphrey Institute for a long while, and so it's always a pleasure for me to hear people refer to one of the most famous quotations from Hubert Humphrey when he talked about the dawn of life, the twilight of life, and the shadows of life. At the end of that quotation, however, he said, the rest of us ought to be able to get along pretty much on our own. And I think that our responsibility here is to get along on our own and pay attention to the health, well-being of young families, as well as those who are vulnerable and who want to live a satisfying and important life as a senior citizen. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. And I'm going to ask you to move closer to your mic because you were coming in and out with your audio. Thanks. And I accidentally skipped Representative Robbins. Sorry about that, Robbins. Go ahead.
Oh, no worries, Madam Chair. Nice to see you all. I'm Kristen Robbins. I represent the other side of Vice Chair Bonner's district, which is half of Maple Grove, Rogers, and Dayton in 34A. And I love my district, and I'm so proud of it. So if you came to our district right now, there's great skating and cross-country skiing at Elm Creek Park. We also have a wonderful public golf course in the summer, Rush Creek, and the Crow River Hassan Park, beautiful horse country up in Dayton. Like, I love my district. So come visit us. And I'm very happy to be on this committee. I really care about issues surrounding the elderly and long-term care facilities. And I also really care about working on disability issues. Oh, another great part of my district is I have Maple Grove Hospital, which is a very important regional hospital in my district, and all the attenuating healthcare services that surround the hospital. And I'm, a big supporter of all the good work that goes on there. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Representative Schumacher. I think you're muted, Representative Schumacher.
Representative
still muted. And Representative Sand, there you go. No. Okay, we'll go back to Representative Schumacher when he figures out his technology. I will introduce myself. Again, my name's Jen Schultz. This is my fourth term in the Minnesota Legislature. I work as a professor at the University of Minnesota Duluth in the Department of Economics. I've been working on healthcare reform for over 20 years, and I'm very passionate at making sure that everyone has access to affordable healthcare. So I'm excited to be chairing this new committee, and we're hoping that in this new committee structure, we'll be able to process our bills very efficiently since it's a finance and policy committee, and excited about the work of our divisions of this committee. So today I'm going to have our nonpartisan House staff introduce themselves. We have two people presenting. Elizabeth Clarkvist, I don't believe you're presenting, but I know Danielle, Ms. Pennelly is presenting, and Ms. Sunderman. So, Ms. Clarkvist, if you want to introduce yourself first.
Sure, Madam Chair and members, I'm Elizabeth Clarkvist with House Research, and I will actually present one slide of the presentation, but I cover health department issues and issues in public health.
Thank you. And then I think we have Mr. Berg. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm Doug Berg. I'm the fiscal analyst for Human Services in the House, and so I deal with fiscal notes and spreadsheets and all things related to that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Berg. And then Ms. Pennelly.
Hi, Madam Chair. I'm Danielle Pennelly from House Research, and I cover the issue areas of long-term care and income assistance, food assistance, and housing assistance.
Thank you. And then Ms. Sunderman?
Hi, Madam Chair and members. I'm Sarah Sunderman from House Research. I cover child welfare issues, child support, behavioral health, so substance use disorder, mental health, and sort of generally legal issues in human services as well.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderman. Did I miss anyone else? Let's see. Representative Schumacher, are you able to introduce yourself now? No, we'll figure that out. I forgot to mention about my district, which is 7A East Duluth. I'm going to talk about two things you should visit that aren't well known, like Lake Superior, but one is Hawks Ridge, which is known for birding and for the fall colors. And the other is Hartley Nature Preserve, two areas that are beautiful to hike in and observe nature. Okay, so today we have a presentation from House Research giving us background introduction into human services. I will pause to see if there are questions. I'm going to remind the presenters to make sure we explain the acronyms. Human services can be like alphabet soup. So since we have six new members to this committee, we may need to make sure we're explaining what an acronym is so people are on the same page. And then I will talk at the end of the presentation, we'll take questions. This committee will end promptly at noon, and then I'll give you an overview of what to expect the rest of the week. So let's start the presentation, Ms. Sunderman, Ms. Pennelly, and Ms. Clarkman.
Madam Chair, I think I am going to need to share my screen in order to do this. It looks like the host needs to enable me to do that. All right. All right, is that showing up?
It is, but not in presentation mode.
Okay.
So we see exactly what's on your desktop, it looks like, which is your presentation view.
Okay. This worked yesterday.
Do you have more than one monitor on?
I do.
That's probably the issue.
I might have Ms. Sunderman try it on hers if I can't figure it out in a minute here.
Can we make her the co-host, Ms. Fang? Okay, go ahead, Ms. Sunderman, try to share yours.
There we go. All right, I think that looks like it's working. So I'll go ahead and start. So we are doing an overview of the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee jurisdiction. I'll just make a couple of introductory comments that this is a pretty high level overview of the programs and services under the jurisdiction of this committee. Our House Research website has a lot more information on these programs. There are several Health and Human Services publications with much greater detail into the programs and services that we're going to be talking about today. And also just that all of us are happy to meet with any of you remotely to answer any questions that you might have outside of the committee meeting or to talk about bill drafts or, you know, other issues that you're interested in. So first, we've got a few general slides that talk about Health and Human Services. This first slide shows all funds expenditures for the base for fiscal years 2022 and 2023 for the Department of Human Services, the Department of Health, MNsure, and the health-related boards. And this is basically just to illustrate that the vast majority of expenditures are within the Department of Human Services. And the next slide just describes Health and Human Services programs and kind of the administration of the programs. These programs focus on healthcare, economic assistance, and social services programs. In general, these are state-supervised, county-administered programs, and the Department of Human Services is the primary executive branch agency that oversees these programs. DHS supervises program administration, ensures federal compliance, makes rules, provides training, program evaluation, and technical assistance to counties. While the counties do the day-to-day administration of the programs, accepting applications, determining eligibility, contracting with local service providers, and referring clients to the services. For many of these programs, they are federal programs, and so Congress sets broad standards and requirements for these programs and appropriates federal funds. And then the Minnesota legislature sets human services policy for the state, but that's often influenced by federal requirements. In order to receive federal funding, we need to, as a state, meet those federal requirements. The next slide shows just the Department of Human Services base budget for fiscal years 2022 and 2023, and these are state general fund expenditures. And the main point here is just that the medical assistance program is the program that represents the vast majority of expenditures, nearly 80% of expenditures out of the Department of Human Services, with everything else being much smaller. Next, we're going to turn to a brief discussion of the long-term care programs. Long-term care services are available to the elderly and people with disabilities through the federal Medicaid program, which is called Medical Assistance or MA here in Minnesota, state-funded programs, and also programs administered by the Board on Aging. The next slide shows a list of long-term care services that are provided under the federal MA program. And these include nursing facility services, intermediate care facilities for persons with developmental disabilities, home health care, personal care assistance services, alternative care, and the home and community-based waiver services. Nursing facility services and the intermediate care facilities for persons with developmental disabilities are considered institutional care or institutional services, and the rest of these are all home and community-based services. For these programs, people that are eligible under the elderly or disability categories need to meet income and asset standards that are lower than the standards for other eligibility categories under MA and other eligibility requirements. And then in addition, in order to be eligible as elderly, a person needs to be age 65 or older, and a person with disabilities needs to satisfy disability criteria under the Federal Social Security Administration or the state medical review team. In order to receive these services, a person also needs to have an assessment of need, and they need to be assessed as having the appropriate level of need for these services. The home care and the PCA services need to be medically necessary, ordered by a licensed physician, documented in a service plan, and then provided in the person's residence or another community setting. And also the services need to be provided by a Medicare certified agency. And then I'll just note that the PCA, the Personal Care Assistance Services, are actually scheduled to be replaced by a new program called Community First Services and Supports as of, I believe, June of this year, but that will be phased in over the course of 12 months, I believe. The alternative care program provides home and community-based services to individuals who are not yet MA enrollees, but who are at risk of nursing home placement. This program is similar to the elderly waiver program that I'll get to in a couple of minutes here, but it's for people who don't yet qualify for MA. This used to be a state-funded program, but beginning in fiscal year 2014, I believe, the state began to receive federal Medicaid match for alternative care. And then the final programs, the home and community-based waiver services, cover two different types of services. They cover services necessary to avoid institutionalization that are not covered under the MA state plan. And they also cover services that are extensions of services that are included in the MA state plan. The Department of Human Services has to apply to the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in order to cover these waivered services. and then submit plans that need to be approved by CMS once every 5 years or so. And Minnesota has 5 of these home and community-based waiver services, and each one covers a slightly different group of people. There's the Community Alternative Care Program, often called CAC, which provides services for people with chronic illnesses who need the level of care that is provided in a hospital. There's the Community Access for Disability Inclusion Program, often referred to as CADI, which provides services for people with disabilities who need the level of care provided in a nursing home. There's the Developmental Disabilities, or DD, waiver, which provides services to people who need the level of care provided in an intermediate care facility for persons with developmental disabilities. There's the Brain Injury Waiver, which provides services to persons with a traumatic or acquired brain injury who need the level of care provided in either a nursing home or a neurobehavioral hospital. And then finally, there's the Elderly Waiver Program, which provides services for the elderly who are at risk of nursing home placement. The next slide shows the percentage of MA enrollees in each major eligibility group and the percentage of MA spending on each group. So the blue line shows the share of average monthly enrollment for each category, and then the green line shows the share of annual expenditures. And so you can see that groups like persons with disabilities and the elderly account for a much greater share of MA spending on a per individual basis. Those two groups represent 16.4% of average monthly enrollment, but nearly 60% of annual expenditures. The next slide shows the long-term care programs that are provided by the state that are state-funded programs. The long-term care consultation services provide screening, assessment, and information and education services to help individuals access and decide on the appropriate level of long-term care services. Family support grants provide state cash assistance for maintaining a child with developmental disabilities or a related condition in the family home. And the funds are for those expenses that are incurred as a result of the disability. And the family support grants are limited to a little over $3,000 per child per year. The Consumer Support Grant Program is a state-funded alternative to MA-reimbursed home care, specifically the services of a home health aide, a PCA, or a home care nurse. And eligible participants receive a monthly cash grant that replaces MA fee-for-service home care payments, and then they manage and pay for a variety of home and community-based services with that monthly cash grant. And this is another program that is going to be replaced by the Community First Services and Supports Program when that comes online in a few months. Semi-independent living services are provided to adults with a developmental disability or a related condition in their home or in the community to help them maintain or increase their ability to live in the community. This is a program that's jointly funded by the state and counties, and each county receives an allocation from the state, and then the county determines how to manage that allocation and distribute it among eligible clients. And then the final service is Essential Community Support Services, which is a little bit of a newer program that was created to provide support services to people who became ineligible for nursing facility services or certain waiver services when the nursing facility level of care was changed on January 1st of 2015. And this service provides a benefit that is limited to $424 per month for services and supports. Finally, long-term care services that are administered by the Board on Aging include a variety of services that are listed here. I won't go through all of them, but I'll describe just briefly. The Board on Aging is a 25-member board whose members are appointed by the governor. It's housed within the Department of Human Services, and staff are provided by DHS. And one of the primary functions of this board is to administer federal Older Americans Act funding. And so all of these programs listed here receive state and or federal Older Americans Act funding. And just a couple of the kind of bigger programs that you might hear about more often are the Senior Linkage Line, which is a free telephone service that provides elderly people with information on and assistance in accessing a range of community services, including things like transportation, housing, home care, chore help, caregiver support, meal delivery, and access to prescription drugs and health insurance counseling. And then the Ombudsman for Long-Term Care is an office that serves as an advocate for and investigates and resolves complaints concerning the health, safety, welfare, and rights of people receiving long-term care services. This office is primarily state-funded, but it does also receive a little bit of Older Americans Act funding as well. And next, I will turn it over to Ms. Clarkvist, who will talk about the Health Department long-term care activities.
Let's pause there. Are there any questions from members? I don't see any hands raised.
Kristen, I have a question.
Go ahead.
So sorry, I couldn't find the raise my hand function. Thank you very much, Ms. Pinelli, for your testimony. I did have a question that I just would like your follow-up on later, but you mentioned that the PCA program is being replaced by the Community for Services and Support Program, and I would love to get much more detail on how the new program will meet the same needs or address different needs. So if you have something that you can send me, you know, by email about that, I'm very interested in understanding how this replacement will work and making sure that there's not, you know, gaps during this transition. So thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure. Madam Chair and Representative Robbins, I think the Community First Services and Supports Program is meant to cover the same group of people as the PCA program and also provide essentially the same supports. I think the big difference is that the CFSS program is supposed to be more flexible and allow for the people on the program to have more choice and more control in the services that they receive. But I can certainly follow up with more information.
Thank you, Representative Robbins, for that question. Thanks for the response. So we will definitely go into more detail about the PCA program, I'm hoping next week. So if we can send out more information to members, we'll do that before next week's hearing. Okay, any other questions from members?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Representative Sandow.
You mentioned that the state supported most of these services, but most or many of the services anyway are administered by the county. How uniform is the quality of administration from county to county, and how does the agency oversee the county's work and the county's decision-making process?
Madam Chair and Representative Sandell, It used to be many years ago, particularly with the waivered services, that the counties were able to contract with providers directly to provide these services and also negotiate payment rates. But several years ago, the state was told by the federal government that we were out of compliance with federal Medicaid regulations, and we needed to create statewide standards and a statewide payment rate system. And so specifically for the waivered services, we did create home and community-based standards that are now in Minnesota statutes. They're governed under Chapter 245D, and then the disability waiver rate setting system, which is in Chapter 256B. And so we do have state statutes that kind of direct how those things are supposed to happen now. In addition, DHS has manuals, program manuals that explain sort of to counties how they are to administer these programs. And DHS also sends out bulletins regularly with updates. And so that's how they kind of supervise and oversee. Although I do think that people who are in the system would say that there probably are still differences between counties in how these things are administered. And I don't know what DHS would say about that, or how with this state supervised county administered system, you could get 87 different counties with very different populations all on the same page, you know, administering all of these various programs exactly the same.
Thank you. Do you think we have to pay close attention to make sure that the quality of services provided in greater Minnesota are as good as those in the metro areas, or vice versa?
Madam Chair, Representative Sandel, I don't know, you know, what the differences are in administration between, you know, the bigger counties and the smaller counties. And I don't know what DHS would have to say about that, but I know anecdotally we do sometimes hear about differences where it may be harder to get certain services in smaller counties than it is in the metro area, for example. But I don't know how much truth is behind all of that.
I'm just going to interrupt for a minute. Representative Sandel, those are great questions. We're going to have DHS here on Wednesday, so I think we should reserve some of these questions. This is just an overview, so we don't want to go into too much detail. We have another 34 slides to get through. So just ask technical questions if you can, and then we'll go into detail when we have the agencies in front of us later this week. And I think Chair Liebling has a question.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask Ms. Punelli, you might have said this and maybe I missed it, but when I first came to the legislature, I had no idea what a waiver was. I mean, I knew what it was in the legal sense, but I think it's a confusing term. And could you just give a really brief explanation of why we use that term so that members can not be confused the way I was?
Sure, Madam Chair and Representative Liebling. I think many years ago in the 1980s, when these services were first developed, the only long-term care services that had been paid for by the federal Medicaid program up until that time were institutional services like nursing facility services, for example. And then there was sort of a shift to try to pay for these home and community-based services, which is a completely different set of services than what would be provided in an institution like a nursing facility. And so they were called waiver services because what the state is really doing These are optional services under medical assistance. The state is requesting to the federal government to waive sort of the standard Medicaid requirements and allow the state to provide services that are either not part of the state MA plan or that are extensions of services that are in the state Medicaid plan.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you for that. Thanks for asking that, Chair Liebling. Representative Moeller.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And this is sort of a follow-up to Representative Liebling's question. I was wanting more information about waivers, and I just did a quick little search and noticed that you have a number of great research briefs online, and just wondering if the medical assistance, there's one September 2020, is probably the best resource to learn more about waivers, but just also pointing out to new members too the great resources that you have online.
Thank you for that, Representative Moeller. Ms. Pinella, do you want to explain where they can access those resources?
Sure, Madam Chair. If you look at just the Minnesota Legislature homepage up at the go to the House, I think up at the top, one of the options to click on is House Offices and House Research Department is listed under that option. You can click on that and you'll see a listing of a whole wide variety of different subject matter topics. And one of them is Health and Human Services. And if you go to that one, you'll get a list of all of our whole variety of publications that we have across the whole range of Health and Human Services programs. I know that Mr. Chun, who's not staffing this committee and is not presenting today, did just recently update his medical assistance information brief. And then I've got a separate one that's a couple of years old, but that describes the MA, home and community-based waiver services.
Okay, thank you. You should also visit DHS's website and just explore that with their programs and information they have. Are there any other questions from members? Not seeing any hands raised. Okay, can you please proceed with the presentation then?
Madam Chair, I believe Elizabeth Clarkvist is going to be talking about Health Department long-term care activities next.
Thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Clarkvist.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Elizabeth Clarkvist, and in addition to the Department of Human Services, the Health Department also administers programs related to long-term care. And these programs include licensing facilities that provide long-term care services, including nursing homes and boarding care homes. The department also surveys nursing homes under a cooperative agreement with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The department operates the Office of Health Facility Complaints, which investigates complaints received regarding facility violations of state or federal law, including maltreatment reports. The agency also licenses home care providers and periodically surveys these providers. It registers housing with services establishments, including those that use assisted living as part of their title. And beginning August 1st of this year, it will license assisted living facilities. And this assisted living facility licensure will replace the assisted living title protection under housing with services. Under the assisted living facility licensure, there will be two categories of facilities licensed, and the licensee will be responsible for both housing and services provided at the facility. In addition to kind of some of these facility and provider functions, the Health Department also administers programs to help long-term care providers attract and retain employees. This includes administration of the Home and Community-Based Services Employee Scholarship Program. The Health Department provides grants to providers of older adult services to cover the cost of an employee's course of study in a long-term care field, and the Health Professional Education Loan Forgiveness Program. Under this program, nurses are eligible for loan forgiveness
for their education loans if they practice in certain long-term care settings. The health department also is administering several initiatives to prevent or address COVID-19 in long-term care facilities. And these include contracts to provide test specimen collection and vaccination services, providing technical assistance to facilities regarding testing and vaccination, a contract for a nurse triage line, contracts for activities to prevent transmission in facilities or provide infection control support and advice, working with facilities to ensure adequate staffing, and providing facilities with toolkits, tracking tools, and guidance documents. And next, Ms. Sunderman will move on to a presentation on behavioral health.
Thank you, Ms. Clarkvist. Ms. Sunderman?
Madam Chair, members, I will be going over some of the behavioral health programs, and I'll start with substance use disorder treatment. There are three main sort of components of SUD treatment, and that would be assessment, treatment, and recovery. Assessment is at a very basic level. There are more details in statute about what an assessment must include, but at the basic level, it's an interview with a counselor to assess a person's SUD treatment needs and possible placement in a treatment program. This you might hear colloquially referred to as a comprehensive assessment or a Rule 25 assessment. But recent legislation regarding the Rule 25 assessment allows for an individual to go to directly to a provider rather than through a county or tribal assessor for a comprehensive assessment. And this is being phased in. So by July 1st, 2022, I believe it is, these services will only be available via direct access. Until then, there's kind of a hybrid phase in where people can go directly to a provider or through the county or tribal assessor in most cases. There are in the treatment sort of bucket, there are some larger categories. There's detox or withdrawal management programs, residential treatment programs, non-residential treatment programs, then sort of halfway houses or sober homes, which are regulated for the most part at the local level. And then there are various recovery support services, such as recovery community organizations, peer-based recovery support services, and service coordination.
I'm going to stop you there, Ms. Sunderman. I think Representative Albright has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question actually reverts back to something that Ms. Pennelly mentioned with regard to the licensure of assisted living facilities. I'm wondering if she could just pull that slide up again. Madam Chair, Ms. Pennelly, you had mentioned something about the initiation of those licensure standards. And I know that there has been that specifically has been the subject of some recent conversation about there being the possibility that they may be even postponed into 2022. I'm wondering if you could elaborate and define when those implementation laws or statutes are going to be implemented.
I think your question is directed at Ms. Clarkvist, not Pennelly. So Ms.
Okay.
Clarkvist.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative Albright, it's my understanding that there have been discussions in the past about delaying implementation of licensure to 2022, but no licensure delay has been adopted. So the current plan is for licensure to begin August 1st of 2021, and the Health Department is in the process of adopting rules on licensure. But I can check with the department to get further information.
Madam Chair, Ms. Clarkvist, with regard to the rulemaking procedure that they're undertaking, will this committee or any others be privy to that prior to their adoption?
Clarkvist?
I believe the department is going to hold a hearing on the rules. So I think the rules have been published prior to that hearing, but I can check on that.
I can add information to that, Representative Albright. So they are doing a rulemaking hearing. I believe it's next week. So the rules, the draft rules have been published and they're taking comments right now. And I can follow up with some more information, Representative Albright.
Thank you. I think that's something that would be very beneficial for this committee to receive in light of the jurisdiction that this committee would have over those in the coming biennium. Thank you.
It is on our list. Thank you, Representative Albright. Okay, we have about 24 minutes left. So I'm going to ask Ms. Sunderman to go quickly over behavioral health, since that is going to be covered in Chair Fisher's committee, although those bills, if they have a finance component, will come to us, and spend a little bit more time maybe on the next issue. But go ahead, Ms. Sunderman.
All right, Madam Chair, members. Just briefly, counties and tribes are responsible for various aspects of SUD treatment. until July 1st, 2022, they're responsible for assessing the treatment needs. They're responsible for determining the financial eligibility for publicly funded treatment and for pre-authorizing and placement in appropriate services for people that they assess. And publicly funded SUD treatment is provided via either managed care or under fee-for-service through the Behavioral Health Fund. And if anyone would like more information on that, either feel free to contact me or Mr. Berg as well. Moving to mental health, counties are responsible for developing mental health services for children and adults in the county. They may provide some of these services directly or contract with private entities to provide services, and they also refer individuals to community resources. All of these programs and services must comply with statutory requirements under the Children's Mental Health Act and Adult Mental Health Act. And then funding comes from a variety of sources, from the federal government, state, and from county sources as well. And public healthcare programs and private insurance pay for some mental health services. This is a graphic from the DHS website that sort of gives an idea of the continuum within mental health treatment. So feel free to take a look at that. It starts with assessment, then treatment, then service delivery, and then kind of goes back to reassessment. Here's a list of the types of adult mental health services. The big buckets, as you see, are emergency services, residential services, and non-residential services. And the DHS website has more information on each of these specific services if you're interested in a particular one. This is a graphic from the DHS website that just shows the sort of intensity level of this range of services. And this is also from the DHS website. It illustrates that children's mental health services largely mimic adult mental health services at the basic level, but there are additional programs such as children's therapeutic services and supports, intensive treatment and foster care, intensive therapeutic homes, and child and adolescent behavioral health services, commonly known as CABS. As well as school-linked mental health services, which we've done quite a bit on in the last few years in the legislature. And again, more information is available on each of these individual programs on the DHS website. Moving now to direct care and treatment within behavioral health. These are state-operated healthcare services for individuals with complex needs related to mental illness, substance use disorder, developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, and those who are committed as mentally ill and dangerous. And this map is a little bit hard to see, but it gives an idea of where these services are in the state and what types. So you can find this on the DHS website, and to blow it up a little bit, it gives a very good idea of where things are. Within direct care and treatment, there are several programs. As you see here, there are programs related to adult mental health, then Children and Adolescent Behavioral Health Services, Community Addiction Recovery Enterprise Services, otherwise known as CARE, Community Support Services, which are residential support services and vocational and day training and habilitation services for people with developmental disabilities or traumatic brain injury. There are rehabilitation services for individuals with serious brain injuries and neurocognitive disorders who also have challenging behaviors. There are special care dental clinics for people with developmental disabilities, severe persistent mental illness, or traumatic brain injury who can't access other dental providers. And then the next slide, we'll talk a bit more about the forensic services, particularly the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. This is a court-ordered treatment program for individuals who are civilly committed by a court as sexually dangerous persons or as having a sexual psychopathic personality. There are two secure facilities, one at Moose Lake, one at St. Peter. Typically, treatment begins at Moose Lake, and then an individual transfers to St. Peter if they progress in the treatment process. And as of January 1st of this year, there are 737 individuals receiving treatment in secure facilities. And there are various levels within this, and there are also community preparation services and that sort of thing. So if anyone wants more detail on this, please just let me know. And now we'll move to back to Ms. Pinelli to talk about income assistance programs.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderman. Ms. Pinelli?
Madam Chair, members, so now we're going to move into a discussion of income assistance programs. There are a variety of programs that are administered by the Department of Human Services that provide cash assistance, food assistance, and housing assistance to low-income Minnesotans. The Minnesota Family Investment Program is a jointly funded state-federal program that is generally thought of as Minnesota's welfare program. In order to be eligible for this program, one of the primary eligibility requirements is that a household has to have either a minor child in the household or a pregnant woman. Minnesota needs to meet federal temporary assistance for needy families requirements, but there is a lot of flexibility in how the state can kind of run this program. One of the other federal requirements is that there's a 60-month time limit, but there are some allowable exceptions and exemptions to that 60-month time limit. The second program is the General Assistance Program. This is a state-funded program that provides assistance to low-income single adults and childless couples. Eligibility for this program is primarily defined in terms of disability or unemployability. The next program is the Federal Supplemental Security Income Program. This is a federal program that provides cash assistance to aged, blind, and disabled persons. And to qualify for this program, an individual has to be age 65 or older, or blind, or have a disability according to criteria that is established by the Social Security Administration. The Minnesota Supplemental Aid Program is a state-funded program that provides supplemental cash assistance to needy, aged, blind, or persons with disabilities who are supplemental security income recipients or who would qualify for SSI except for excess income. And this program is a federally mandated state supplement to SSI. The next program is housing support, and this provides payments on behalf of eligible persons to pay for room and board and related housing services. In order to be eligible for this program, an individual must have county approval for residence in a housing support setting and must be aged, blind, or over 18 years of age and have a disability and meet specified income and asset standards, belong to a category of individuals potentially eligible for general assistance, or receive licensed residential crisis stabilization services and MA. The supplemental, the housing or the food support programs, I should say, are the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is also known as SNAP, and then there's also a small state-funded Minnesota Food Assistance Program. The SNAP program is federally funded. It's operated by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and it provides food assistance to low-income individuals that is used to purchase federally authorized food and food products. And then finally, the Child Care Assistance Program, which I'm not sure if that's under the jurisdiction of this committee, Madam Chair, or if it's only under the jurisdiction of Representative Pinto's Early Childhood Committee, but that provides assistance for eligible low-income families to help with the costs of childcare. Madam Chair, these income assistance programs are administered in a couple of different ways. MFIP, General Assistance, Minnesota Supplemental Aid, Housing Support, and Child Care are all state-supervised, county-administered programs. The Supplemental Security Income Program is a federal program that's administered through local offices of the Social Security Administration. And then SNAP is a federal program, but it is administered by counties under the supervision of the Department of Human Services. The next slide just shows income eligibility standards for these income assistance programs. Some of these income eligibility standards are set in federal law and others are set in our state statutes. I won't go into any more detail about that unless there are questions. We can move on to the asset eligibility standards. Which also some of these are set in federal law and some in state law. For MFIP, general assistance, housing support, and the Minnesota Supplemental Aid Program for recipients who are non-SSI recipients, the asset limit is $10,000 for the equity value of personal property. For the federal SSI program, the asset limit is $2,000 for an individual and $3,000 for a couple, and that asset limit also applies to MSA recipients who are also receiving SSI. The federal SNAP program does not have an asset limit if the recipient has income less than 165% of the federal poverty guidelines and they receive a domestic violence brochure. And then under federal law, the child care asset limit is $1 million in countable assets. And then we also have a state statute that conforms to that federal law. The next few slides just are tables that show different aspects of the program. This current slide shows maximum monthly benefits in 2021 for these various income assistance programs. The following slide shows fiscal year 2020 expenditures and where the funding source was for these programs. So you can see some programs just receive federal funding, some receive both federal and state funding. Some are state only, and there are a couple that also receive some local county funding as well. Then finally, this slide shows average monthly recipients for fiscal years 2019 and 2020 for these income assistance programs, except the GA numbers are average monthly cases and the child care numbers are average monthly families. And then my final slide on income assistance program is just listing off some of the other smaller programs that provide assistance to low-income persons, including emergency services grants, which provide homeless persons essential services and emergency shelter. These are grants that are awarded on a competitive basis and provide things like emergency shelter, motel vouchers, day shelter, and essential services to children, unaccompanied youth, single adults, and families who are experiencing homelessness. The Food Shelf Program provides funding to Minnesota Hunger Solutions for allocation to food shelves around the state. Both of those two programs, emergency services grants and the Food Shelf Program, received additional funding last year in response to COVID-19. The next program, Emergency Food Assistance, distributes USDA donated food to families and individuals using on-site meal programs, food shelves, and shelters. And the program funds cover costs associated with warehousing, transporting, tracking, and allocating these commodities. And then finally, the Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota, or FAME program, helps low-income Minnesotans increase their savings and build financial assets by providing personal finance education, asset-specific training, and ongoing coaching. Plus, participants receive a financial match at a rate of 3-to-1 for each dollar of earned income that's deposited, up to a maximum of $480 in savings per year. And then the funds can be used to purchase a home or vehicle, to pursue post-secondary education, or to capitalize a small business. And next, I will turn it back to Ms. Sunderman.
Thanks, Ms. Pinelli. Ms. Sunderman, let's see how fast you can talk.
Madam Chair, members, I'll do my best. So the next slide is about child support enforcement. Federal law requires each state to establish a child support enforcement program and sets broad standards and requirements for the states. Then the federal government provides TANF and child support enforcement funding to states with child support systems that meet these requirements, and then matches 66% of county and state spending on enforcement. The legislature has then established child support policy within the parameters of the federal requirements, and DHS is responsible for oversight of the federal or of the state child support system that counties administer. And the next two bullets are just some statistics from the most recent annual child support enforcement report that DHS publishes on their website. Moving now to child welfare and child protection services, federal law, similarly to child support, requires each state to provide intervention and services to protect children from abuse and neglect. The legislature establishes policy to implement federal law and provide services to families. The main places in statute to find these are the recently recodified Maltreatment of Minors Act, which is now in Chapter 260E, and then additional sort of post-reporting procedures are in Chapter 260C. And the funding comes from a variety of sources. Maltreatment of Minors Act, under this, this is about primarily about reporting maltreatment. There are voluntary, everyone is a voluntary reporter. Everyone's encouraged to report known or suspected maltreatment, but there are also mandatory reporters who must report suspected or known maltreatment in the preceding 3 years. These are professionals or professionals delegates in healing arts, social services, hospital administration, psychological or psychiatric treatment, childcare, education, correctional supervision, probation or corrections, or law enforcement. And this also includes members of the clergy receiving information through ministerial duties. Under the Maltreatment of Minors Act, counties are responsible for providing child welfare services for children alleged to have been maltreated in their homes. They have to work with law enforcement. They're all supposed to coordinate and cooperate in their investigations. When a caregiver outside of the child's home is alleged to have maltreated the child, the responsible agency investigates the maltreatment allegation in the facility or other setting. And that depends on where the alleged maltreatment occurred. For example, in schools, an MDE would investigate facilities licensed by DHS. Generally, are DHS investigating the maltreatment allegation. If a child is not safe in their home or a parent has not cooperated with a service plan, the county may file a child in need of protection or services case. That's, you'll see that referred to as CHIPS. And the child is then placed outside of the home in foster care, and a case plan is developed to attempt to reunify the family within 6 to 12 months, and there are review hearings periodically. If the home remains unsafe after the child is in foster care for 11 months, the county will file a permanency petition. And as you see here, there are three main types of permanency, and always the court decisions are governed by the best interests of the child. There is also a program for monthly assistance payments called North Star Care for children in foster care, children who've been adopted, or children whose custody has been transferred to a relative. And for more details on that, you can let me know and I will give you more information. Moving to services for vulnerable adults. As you see, vulnerable adults are individuals who are 18 and older who are impaired physically, mentally, or emotionally and unable to protect themselves from maltreatment, and also including residents or inpatients of a facility who receive certain outpatient services or who receive certain home care services. Maltreatment is defined in statute, as you see here. Similarly to child maltreatment, there are mandated reporters, but also any person may voluntarily report. And reports of suspected maltreatment must be made to the common entry point known as MARC, which is the Minnesota Adult Abuse Reporting Center. Reports are screened and referred to the appropriate lead agency within 2 days, and then counties, law enforcement, DHS, and MDH assess and investigate maltreatment allegations. And for more detailed information on this, we do have a publication published in December of 2018 called the Minnesota Vulnerable Adults Act. Moving to DHS program integrity and operations. DHS.
I think I'm going to stop you there, Ms. Sunderman. And so we'll pick up program integrity if we have time. So I just want to remind committee members we're going to meet tomorrow at 10:30, and we're going to have DHS in front of us with the commissioner to talk about more in detail about the agency and their responsibilities. And then your homework is to look at the Blue Ribbon Commission report that was published, and we'll try to give links via email, and also the House Select Committee Racial Justice Report. So look at that and then go visit House Research Briefs and the DHS website. So obviously we have a lot to cover in this committee. I'm looking forward to do bipartisan work and get a lot done, especially in the long-term care and disability area. We have a lot of work to do on PCA rate setting and reform, but we're going to be doing important work this session, and I'm looking forward to it. So I will see everybody on Wednesday. We did have a quorum. I forgot to mention that, and we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.